It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. For as long as anyone can remember, there have been concerns about whether there's enough water for a city like Phoenix to be sustainable in the long run. The reality seems even more daunting after years of drought and disputes over what share of the Colorado River states like Arizona and California may get. And most headlines indicate those disputes are getting worse. But in his new book, Water is for Fighting Over and Other Myths About Water in the West, John Fleck paints a fairly optimistic picture about cooperation and collaboration. And John, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, John, why did you have to dash the downward hopes and dreams of certain people by saying, in essence, that water and fighting don't have to be connected? I mean, what about the quote that was attributed to Mark Twain?
Well, so first of all, Mark Twain didn't say it. The old quote that whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting over, there's no evidence that he said it, and it seems to have come up rather recently in the last few decades. But more importantly, one of the things that scholars who study water governance and water transboundary conflicts find is that it is far more common, both here in the United States and also internationally, for parties who share a river or share an aquifer across a border or a boundary to figure out ways to collaborate and cooperate it through treaties, through compacts, and through informal water sharing arrangements. And so waters for fighting over sounds good, and it gets a lot of attention. I'm a former journalist, and we love writing about stories of conflict. But in fact, far more often, water is in fact for collaborating over. It's not as sexy a story. It doesn't get as much of attention, but it's the thing that happens most commonly.
Well, you do mention, of course, the court case Arizona versus California, a legendary case which did in fact involve fighting over water. Is it time now to just think of that as history and not something that continues to define this water relationship among a lot of Western states?
I think very much so. I mean, Arizona has perhaps more than any other Western state a sort of pugilistic history. And there's this sort of longstanding attitude among Arizonans, and it really has dominated your state's political culture, you know, for the last century, that California is the enemy and that California is out to steal your water. And Arizona pursued that with a passion, especially in the first half of the 20th century, and it really hurt you. Arizona, at a time when everybody else was trying to figure out how to share the Colorado River, Arizona was very much in conflict. You know, refused to ratify the compact. You know, repeatedly went to court. You know, famously dispatched the National Guard in the 1930s to try to prevent the construction of Parker Dam. And the result was that as these complicated deals were being made, Arizona was often not at the table. And so you all now have sort of junior priority in the Colorado River, which has hurt you. It's still an undercurrent of the politics of Arizona, and I think it continues to hurt Arizona to the extent that, you know, this fear that California is going to steal your water is part of your politics, because what has to happen now is some really complicated deals where everybody agrees to give up some water. And if you think California is out to steal it, then it makes those kind of agreements harder.
And John, you even write that Arizona has always been its worst enemy and that the state's behavior is driven by psychology as much as geography. What would make Arizona modify that point of view? Because as you said, there's a lot of political capital, or there has been for decades, to show, hey, we're fighting California.
One of the interesting things about Arizona, to me, is if you look at Arizona's history of water, a lot of it is driven by this sort of psychodrama of fear of running out of water and fear of aridity. And I get that. I mean, I'm a desert dweller, too. I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is also a dry place. And, you know, you get this sense of the desert sort of looming around you, and there's that sort of sense of fear of running out of water. But one of the interesting things that Arizona doesn't give itself enough credit for is the enormous success and what, in fact, you have done over the last, you know, 10, 20, 30, really going back at least 30 years, is Arizona has actually demonstrated the ability to survive and be successful and even thrive with a lot less water. And the problem is that, and this is common in arid climate cities, is that we don't give ourselves enough credit for our successes. And if you don't understand that you've been successful, so like Phoenix, for example, water use in Phoenix peaked in 2002 and has been declining ever since, you know, and right, we know what has happened to population during that time. Population has been going up. Total water use is going down, so that's a success. And if you sort of recognize that that's possible, you're less likely to feel like you need to fight for the remaining share of what is clearly a dwindling resource in the Colorado River.
And it does seem like water is the one issue that people on all sides of the political debate can't come together on, saying that, yeah, to realistically have Phoenix and the rest of the valley and Tucson and other areas really thrive, they're going to have to come to sort of an agreement about how water is used, how water is saved, et cetera.
Yeah, and it's going to require using less water. But the interesting thing is that we've already demonstrated. You know, Phoenix and Tucson are great examples. Las Vegas, my own home community of Albuquerque, have already demonstrated the ability to use a lot less water. And sort of learning from those successes and giving ourselves credit for those successes is really critical, because we're going to have to do more of it. We're going to have to use even less, and we're going to have to learn to get by with even less water than we're using now.
It's KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix talking with John Fleck, and his new book is called Water is for Fighting Over and Other Myths About Water in the West. John, drought is a reality. And so are you convinced that if the drought continues, that enough changes in places like Arizona, California, New Mexico are being made in order to counteract its effects, or at least deal with them seriously?
I'm going to waffle on the answer, because it's clear, and this is one of the things that really motivated my book, it's clear that there has been enormous success, and communities, and so part of that success is just using less water. Part of that success is learning how to use less water, you know, learning what conservation measures look like and how to implement them, both at a community level and an institutional level and a regional level. And so we've demonstrated that ability. The question is, how much farther will we need to go? I mean, drought is enduring. Climate change clearly makes this problem much more difficult. Scientists recently described it as sort of a tax on our water supply. When it's warmer, you get more evaporation off of the plants and the swimming pools and so on. So the problems are harder. So we could fail at this if we don't recognize the successes we've had, and if we're not willing to continue to push harder to go farther.
And one of the things that you feature in the book is collaboration, and collaboration in some cases from unexpected sources. Were they as unexpected to you as they might be to a reader?
They were really unexpected to me, because I came of age. I mean, I've been writing about water as a journalist for 30 years, and I came of age in the narrative of Cadillac Desert, in the sense that of sort of skullduggery and conflict and then the doom and risk we've created. And I spent a lot of my journalistic career telling stories like that and looking for these problems. And it was only in the really the last 10 or 15 years, and the work really started here in New Mexico, very significant drought conditions since the turn of the century. And I kept looking for stories of people, of conflict over water and people running out of water. And you could find them now and then. But far more often what I was realizing was that communities were not running out of water. And as a journalist, that's kind of a weird story. How do you write about a community not running out of water? But they were much more common. You know, I had an old editor who used to say, John, we don't write about planes that don't crash. Well, most planes don't crash. And if you're trying to think about planeness, you know, what how planes work, you know, that's also an interesting feature. And I began to look at these stories of communities not running out of water. What were they doing that was successful? What can we learn from them? And partly is just internal conservation measures, and partly is these collaborative relationships with neighboring communities, with neighboring water users across, you know, water agency boundaries and state boundaries, and, you know, most recently in the case of the relationship between you and U.S. and Mexico on across international boundaries. And those are the things that don't get as much attention, because they're just quiet successes. But they become really important, both because of the success they've achieved and also the lessons that they give us for the additional success we're going to need to deal with an increasingly difficult environment going forward.
And there are a lot more stories and details in the book Water is for Fighting Over and Other Myths About Water in the West. The author is John Fleck. John, thanks for the time.
Thank you so much for having me.